Before I get started, I want to just have a few couple of people stand. First of all, if you are a leader or a potential leader, but you are someone who was brought here by someone else, you were invited to the conference by another individual in this room who's an existing leader, would you stand? So if you're one of these people, you are what we have described as our emerging leaders. Now, let me give the people a round of applause, please. And what I want to be real careful about is that even as you look at the people who stood, this is not an issue of age. Because, you know, a lot of people will say, if I still have somewhere to go, I'm still emerging as a leader. There is someone who is investing in me. So the thing that is exciting about that is that when you look at the formation of this conference, we are just to have a group of 75 people who were brought here because someone was investing in them. What a profound thing that is. So already the energy in this room is very different. Over the next couple of days, we're going to there's going to be a lot of conversations, times for you to talk with each other, to talk with some smaller groups of folks, and to come up with some ideas and to come away with some things. So we've got a lot of things planned, and it's going to move fairly quickly. But before we do that, I wanted to show you some information, because there's two things. One is to talk about this concept, to give you a little bit of framing on the conference, but also to show you some of the data that we got from the survey that we did. And one of the things that was so great is when you're the Murdoch Trust and you send out a survey, you get a very high response rate very quickly. So we had probably a 60% response rate within a few days. Which I predicted would happen. So we have some great data to share with you today to start the conversation. And all the conversation, some of the primers that we'll give you are based on that information. So that'll be great. I have to tell you that today is also, almost to the day, but it's about a week prior to this, the anniversary of a very significant experience in my life. About a year ago now, I had forged a new friendship with a friend of mine. He was an executive down in Texas. And I was going down to Texas to spend a couple of days with an organization there doing a leadership workshop. And he said, if you're coming down here, why don't you come on over, why don't you stay an extra night on Friday after you spend there Thursday and Friday, and come over to my house, and we could get a chance to spend some time together. And so I thought it would be a great idea. So I went down, and I did my two-day workshop, and I went over to his house on Friday. And for some reason I thought, because this guy was a big-time executive, I don't know why this entered my brain, but that he was going to have a hot tub. And I don't have a hot tub because my wife says that everybody that has a hot tub doesn't use their hot tub. But so I don't have one. So this is special to me. So I packed my swim trunks. So I get there and to his house, and we spend this great time. We've had two phone conversations. And we spend this time together, and I got a chance to play video games with his two boys, and his wife was out of town, but got to know them. And they went to bed, and at one point I said, hey, I peeked out in the back and I noticed that he did, sure enough, have this awesome hot tub, awesome pool with the waterfall from the tub going into the pool. And I said, any chance we could hot tub? Which is a strange thing to ask your new friend. But I said, I brought my trunks. So sure enough, we go hot tubbing. So we spend probably 2 or 3 hours in the hot tub. And we're having this great conversation about life and faith and work and leadership and business and the church and just deep conversation for 2 or 3 hours. Well, I need you to rewind to Wednesday night, because I flew down Wednesday night and I did something different. In this particular case, I was sick of the fact that when I wear my shirt, my collars sneak up underneath the lapel of my jacket. And so I recalled back to my dad, who always got heavy starch in his shirts. And so I asked the dry cleaner to give me heavy starch. Never done that before. So they gave me heavy starch, and I packed my shirts and went on my way. Well, Thursday, I go into this workshop, and by the end of Thursday, I'm doing my thing. By the end of Thursday, my chest was so raw, I thought my nipples were bleeding. It was so painful that I was trying everything I could to keep my chest away from the surface of my shirt. And so I'm dealing with this, and then I get back to my hotel room, and I'm thinking, what am I going to do? There's no Walmart around. I've got to find some way to go in tomorrow. All I've brought is heavy starch shirts. So I called down to the concierge, and I said, do you have Band-Aids? He said, sure. So I go down. I go down to the front desk, and he got Band-Aids. But all he had was a little round pasty guys. So Friday morning, I wake up, and I slap those babies on, and I go into my Friday. I have a great day. One of the greatest consulting days I've had. Beautiful day. Now fast forward to the hot tub. So I've been in the hot tub for 2 or 3 hours with my new buddy. And we're talking about all these great issues. And at some point, it occurred to me, I don't know if I took those Band-Aids off. And I remember, I don't know how you look down. I looked down, and I'd been sitting there like this, too, you know, trying to be cool in the tub. So I got my arms up on the side of the hot tub, and the water line's right about here. And sure enough, I'm still wearing Band-Aids. And I didn't know what to say in that moment, so I just started to yell. And I said, dude, what were you thinking? We've been in the tub for 2 or 3 hours. I'm wearing Band-Aids on my nipples, and you didn't say a word about it. And this is exactly what he said. He said, I don't know, I thought it might have been cool in Seattle. And that is a significant story in my life. Because, you know, Alex is now a good friend of mine. But you know what's funny is after we got that out on the table, it wasn't okay. Not everything was covered at that point. We still had some places to go together, you know. But it was like these moments of this uncomfortable kind of space where this is a weird thing that just happened. I have other friends that would laugh. He wasn't the one who laughed right away, so that makes it even more uncomfortable. But the reason why I tell you that story is that it highlights for me something that we've found when we've talked to what's literally thousands of leaders in our research over the last 10 years. And one of the things that we have found is that there are at least two kinds of people. There are those of you in the room who are covered in Band-Aids, and you have a very strong leadership voice, but you aren't aware of it. You don't realize that you are covered in a lot of things that other people might see. And there are others of you in the room who are covered in Band-Aids, and you know it, but you're so afraid that someone is actually going to see those wounds or the Band-Aids that you spend most of your time managing those kinds of perceptions. And we see that leaders are kind of in the space between those two things, leading with a strong voice and saying, I'm gonna put those insecurities aside, I'm going to lead. And then some people who are trying to figure out, you know, how do I, in the midst of this strong voice inside of me, how do I lead when I care so much what other people think? How do I lead in that? So we're going to talk more and more about that today and get a chance for you to begin to become more increasingly aware and also to increasingly find a voice for those of you that need to find that voice. So that's one of the things that we want to do today. Let me see if this is... Well, that's frozen. So I have, we'll see if that comes up in just a second. The four things that I want to talk about this morning are these. I want to talk about the identity of a leader as person. Because these are things that have also emerged in the research that we did. The identity of a leader as person. The second thing that I want to talk about is place. Where is the place that leaders develop? Where are the spaces where you develop? The third thing is related to purpose. And this is the question of, for the sake of what do you lead? And why is purpose so important? And finally, we're going to talk about practice. We're going to spend most of our time talking about these issues of awareness, but also getting into some very real and practical ways that we can begin to develop the leadership potential in the people that are around us. So those are the four pieces that we'll begin with. And I want to start with the issue of person. When it comes to leadership, one of the things that I find fascinating is that we expect a lot. We expect so much from the leaders around us. And in many of the push kinds of things that we give to leaders, in other words, things that we say, this is who you should be, are very linear in the way that we approach those things. We want people that have integrity, that have courage, and have conviction. But the fact is, when you talk to most leaders about their life, it's not a linear list that emerges. What a list is these competing expectations that they face to be multiple things to multiple people. And we want people that are strong and both real. We want people that are courageous, that will take unbelievable risks in the face of fear. You know, courage isn't doing something, you know, it's doing something in spite of the fact that you are afraid. So we want people that have that courage. But we don't want just courage. We also want people who are reluctant. One of the chapters that in my book, Dying to Lead, that I get most grief for, which surprised me, is I wrote a chapter called Reluctance to Lead. And I've had so many Christian leaders come up to me and say, Rob, I don't get it. To which I kind of think, if I know them well enough, I know you don't. But it's the but it's that, do you have a healthy reluctance to step into that role? I always say that the worst person I could ever hire is someone who wants the job too bad. Because they don't know what, they haven't thought about what's at stake. So we want those two things. We also want people that are convicted, clearly expressing what they want, right? We need a direction. We know that's important, but at the very same time, we want people that are confessing. Like Nehemiah, who goes before the king, and he says, and the king says, what do you want? And he says, I want to go build the wall. But long before that, he was on his knees in prayer, confessing his sins before God. So we want that kind of a person who's living in that. We want people that are steadfast and strong, who stand like a rock, and at the very same time, we want people that are vulnerable, have permeable boundaries, and will listen and take in new information. We want people that are full of hope, a hope in something that we may not see, and at the very same time, we want people that are realistic, attached to reality. That's a lot. That's why I put you, I could have put me at the bottom of that teeter-totter and said, we ask a lot from people who lead well. We're asking a lot. One of the things that I think is very interesting is if you look at, you know, this question of identity, that something that came up in the research that we did with you is the issue of cultural and theological differences. This question of whether or not a different generation sees their world, like what is the gospel? Big questions are out there. And one of the places that this is very interesting is in the area of vocation and calling. And I'm going to have us do a series of very quick conversations. But one of the things I find fascinating is this is a quote that many of you know from Frederick Buechner. And it goes like this. The place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deepest hunger meet. You know that quote, right? Well, there's another quote on calling and vocation that comes from Dietrich Bonhoeffer that goes like this. When Christ calls a man, he bids him come and die. What I'd like you to do for about 2 minutes is I want you to turn to the person next to you, and I'm going to force you to pick one of those. If you had to pick one that's going to be your definition of vocation when it comes to your calling as a leader, which one do you want? So take 2 minutes and have that conversation.
Boom.
Yeah, where are we?
Okay.
I must have started 10 minutes ago. I must have started 10, 15 minutes ago.
It was a little bit late in giving.
They started late.
Yeah,
that late.
Well, by 20 after.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I know how these conversations go, I think. There are some of you who are frustrated at me for making you pick, and most of you probably refused to pick. So you said I'm somewhere in the middle, or you said it's both, or some of you said this one is more true to me now, this one was more true to me in the past. But what it highlights when you have this conversation is that people see it differently. They think differently about this issue of calling, and they, and even in the way that the spaces of their mind are occupied by this issue of sacrifice. Because on the right side, what you hear people talk about is the danger of what Bonhoeffer talks about, is that that could become sort of disguised, you know, martyrdom, disguised as sacrifice. And on the left side, you have self-interest disguised as self-sacrifice, potentially. But they're both true, right? And I'm not going to try to unpack this. All the theologians in the room are going, give me the mic, McKenna. But we're not going to unpack this now, but it highlights some of those differences. When it comes to the place leaders develop, one thing we know, and I find this interesting, And this is the research that we've done for the last decade and the research that's been done for the last 30 years. People develop and learn on the job. They develop and learn on the job. The vast majority, about 80% of the experiences that we have found, when people talk about the key developmental experiences of their lives, they happen in life on the job. That's for business leaders, for pastors, about 90% on the job. Because pastors are never off the job, so that's what's challenging about their life. But what's interesting about this is not the fact, you know, all of you would say, yeah, you develop on the go while you're on the edge doing these things. And there are a certain portion where we do learn in training and formal kinds of educational experiences. But it happens like this. But what's interesting is when you look at the development plan of a person, if they have one, typically 80% of the things indicated in there are off the job. So while we know this is true, we send people to classes, we give them books and CDs to develop, when in fact, there's this incredible learning opportunity all the time. It's happening on the job. We have these opportunities right now with all the leaders that are in this room to spend that time. This issue of purpose, before we get into the data, is so important, and I want us to think about this. You know, Jesus, in the end of the book of John, has this conversation with Peter that so many of you are familiar with, where he asks Peter the question. He says, do you love me, right? And what does Peter say? Yes, I love you. And what does Jesus then do as soon as Peter answers the question? He asks him again, right? He says something, but he asks him again, do you love me? That is weird. That's a weird thing to do, to ask someone a question, the same question twice. Go try it in the hall. See how that goes for you. But it's a strange thing to do. And I've had the chance, copying someone of the things that Jesus did in this, I ask leaders, why do you lead? And oftentimes what you'll get, with one particular executive, she said, I lead because I believe in the 2016 vision for our organization and where it's going. And she gave me a lot of corporate speak. So I asked her, I thought, well, Jesus did this. Why do you lead? And at first she kind of, you know, thought, well, you're too young, Rob. You don't understand. Or you don't lead a business like I do. You're an academic. You don't understand. And then if I gave her time, she kind of turned it around and she said, I don't really know exactly why I lead. So what does Jesus do with Peter? Ask him again. That's even more weird. Do you love me? And I'm thinking about Peter's life. And I thought, well, I'm going to try that with this leader. And I said, why do you lead a third time? To which at this point, she said this, I lead because when I was 9 years old, my sister and I wanted to fly. So we built cardboard wings, and we got up on the roof of our house. And she pushed me off, and I broke my arm. And ever since then, I've wanted to help people fly. And I thought, now you have me. Now I will follow you. I'll go build airplanes with you. Now you have me, because you thought about this and your purpose at that kind of a level. And with Jesus asking Peter at that third level down, what I felt in that, the burden on Peter, I thought, what Jesus is saying is, Peter, do you know what's at stake? If you follow me and you lead for my sake, do you know what's at stake? Because the next thing that Jesus says is, when you were young, you dressed yourself. And when you're old, you will stretch out your arms and someone else will dress you. Probably referring to how Peter would die. And he's saying, do you understand what's at stake? And I think that's what's important for us in the next couple of days, is for us to be willing to consider the stakes and to push ourselves to the edge, even if it means going three questions down. A little bit in the data, I want to show you some things to primer these conversations. Just so you know, in terms of length of leadership, we had a really diverse group of respondents. You can see, this is just to give you a picture of that. Type of organization was all over the map. And even the age, we had people from, the demographic was fairly diverse. We asked you three questions. What is the one thing you would most like to learn about emerging leaders? Where has your organization struggled most in connecting leaders of different generations? And third, when you leave the Leadership Advance Conference on Emerging Leaders, what would make you say the experience was of sustainable value? So I want to share just a little bit of what we saw in that. You're going to get a chance to unpack all of that after lunch and even during lunch. You can see that they broke out into five major categories, which we'll get into in just a moment. Let me give them to you now. Leadership identification and development. So where do we find them and how do we develop them? cross-generational relationships for learning. How do we establish those relationships? Dealing with cultural and theological differences, motivation and desire, what motivates the other generation or the leader, the other group of leaders, and sharing power and control. Surprising that that would show up at all, you know, but it did. So some of the things, so this is 36.5% of this was this leadership identification and development. And to give you some idea of what was said, one thing that emerged, I want them to speak honestly about what they want to learn, what they're facing, and I want the existing leaders to shut up long enough to hear it. What are you really thinking? What leadership principles, tactics are they using or responding to as a younger generation that we don't use or aren't as relevant to us older folks? If you're an older folk, raise your hand. Don't do that. When to cut the apron strings, they seem to want more covering than my generation did. There comes a time when they need the confidence of leading on their own. And then, what do they need to be successful? How can we best serve them? It's a good thing. What do they look for in mentors and the bosses above them? And how to balance properly the teaching and learning relationship with them. How do I learn from them and also teach them? What does that look like? Was another thing that was raised. The second question we asked was, where has your organization struggled most in connecting leaders of different generations? And we had a pretty good mix on all the categories that were emerging in the survey. So let me just show you a couple of examples of that. One thing that was said, we tend to place the good old boys in the places where the real decisions are made. We give a lot of responsibility and authority to emerging leaders, but not at the place of directional decisions. I don't know what to do with this one, but just thought it was interesting. The rest of the staff responded well to a team approach. The youngest staff members feel like they don't have a voice with the top leaders in our organization. Some strong feelings in this, for sure. There really hasn't been an explicit effort to bridge the gap. I think the major issue is the difference between what emerging leaders need and what and how existing leaders are offering in terms of advice. There really isn't an easy conduit for development right now. I can't help but say this. We know that people develop on the job, and they develop when they're watching you. So the opportunity is right in front of you, literally in this room right now. Gen X is crunched in the middle. This is fascinating, isn't it? Some people are talking about these middle generations saying that we're a forgotten generation in the midst of this. Develop emerging leaders. Let's talk about what the generation before is doing. But what about the generations in the middle? Someone was talking last night about this massive boomer generation that's not being touched either. Kind of fascinating. Giving them a vision for hanging in there for the long haul. Is it that we're not properly training them? Are we not sufficiently investing in them? Are we not giving them a vision for their career track? There were a few of you who said it's not an issue, about 13%. So just to give you a couple of quotes, this hasn't been a struggle for us. We're a new organization, so not really dealing with it yet. The other thing that was mentioned is we don't have leaders of different generations. So, you know, if that's where you are, then Godspeed. But it was mentioned by several people that it was not an issue. When you leave the Leadership Advance Conference on Emerging Leaders, what would make you say the experience was of substantial value? This is what we have tried to do. This is what we've tried to do. You want to make connections and initiate relationships. You want to do that. And I know that that's something that we're trying to be intentional about. Connecting with other leaders of all generations to learn from each other is what someone said. Connecting with competing colleagues in a meaningful way. Competing colleagues, that's interesting. And connections for support while back home. You want to be able to translate this back home. The other piece that you asked for is to be able to leave with some implementable tools and processes. And I think what you hopefully will get is also to get to have a conversation, but also leave with some ideas so that this might create a spring of all kinds of development conversations. Because the fact is this, you look at the people who stood up just a minute ago, and they are waiting for someone to speak into their lives. One last piece of data. What we found is that when you ask people about the key experiences of their life, one of the most common experiences people reported was role models. And it wasn't necessarily mentoring, but it was, I saw this person behave in a certain way and I decided I want to be like that. But in one-third of the cases in our research, one-third of the time, they were bad role models. So they said, I saw this person and I never want to be like that. Never want to be like that. So we're going to have these great conversations. I want to invite Ron Carucci up here, who has become a very good friend, and to talk about what we're going to go into next. Because here's where it gets a little bit, you become a part of the activity. So, Ron.
One, two, there you go. Hi, everybody. I echo Rob's sentiments to tell you that it is, there are hardly words to say how encouraging and inspiring it is to see you here. We have spent a collective number of years of our lives thinking and wrestling and struggling and hoping for tomorrow's generation of leaders. We've studied it, we've written about it, we've been affected by it, we've loved what God is doing. To see 250 of you gathered to talk about it with each other is nothing short of holy. And so we hope that by tomorrow afternoon you will have been transformed by the courage it took to be here, especially for those of you who really stepped up and brought somebody with you. Actually, there's one emerging incumbent leader pair here who also happens to be a father and son. That's guts. So my job right now is to get you ready for your work for the afternoon, and there's a lot of work to do. So let me see if I can prepare you for that. Let me begin, though, by one sort of blinding flash of the obvious, and that is to thank the Murdoch Foundation for their tremendous courage to want to step up and do this. First of all, the book you see on the table that you were given at the counter is a product that Tom Ryan and I got the privilege of building, but it is really authored by 40 emerging leaders who took the courage to tell their story. So if you needed to know more, so much of your questions in the data were, I want to know them more. This is an in-your-face look at who they are. And were it not for the generous grant from the Murdoch Foundation, that book would not be possible. So they are responsible for putting their money where their mouth is and caring about this topic. The second thing is that for them to depart so far and so courageously from what they know to transform this event and to work really hard doing it, Terry Stokesbury and Mary Hill are to be thanked by each of you personally throughout the next couple of days. So I hope you'll each find a way to get to them personally and thank them for all that they have sacrificed for all of us to be here. Yeah. No transformation in the gospel, no transformation in any of our lives takes place outside of human relationships. That is a fundamental premise of the next 2 days. So if you're wondering why the unit of analysis seems to be the pair of you, that's why. But that isn't enough. We believe the transformation, for it to sustain itself, takes place in three levels. It takes place within us, it takes place between us, and it takes place among us. So we've designed your conversations to allow for your intrapersonal reflective or your inside change to happen. We've allowed for the change to happen between you in relationship, and hopefully, collectively, we'll have transformation among us. Most of us tend to gravitate toward one of those and hope that we get change. We all know what flash in the pan change looks like, so I'll go to a self-help program and I'll go on a diet, and you know, or we'll go to marriage counseling, or you know, we'll reorganize the ministry. So we'll try one of those and hope for the best, but we all have seen change that didn't stick. Our hope tomorrow is to send you away, not on some mountaintop high that causes you to make some great commitments to each other here and then regress back to life you know by tomorrow night. Our hope is to create a conversation that starts here and goes on for years to come and sustains itself, and that all the members of the ministries that you represent will benefit from your work. Trust me when I tell you that the tens of thousands of people that you collectively represent are back at home today praying, fasting, and sacrificing chickens in hopes of your transformation. Don't disappoint them. Let's talk about what you're going to spend the afternoon doing. There are two primary conversations that you're going to have this afternoon. From 1:30 to 2:45, you're going to be in generational conclaves. So we're going to have emerging leaders, incumbent leaders separated for just a bit. The incumbent leaders will be in here. The emerging leaders will be next door. From 3 to 4:30, we're going to bring you back together in this room for the second part of that conversation. Let me give you some details about those conversations. And all of the information you need to have is in the book in front of you as well. The conversations will be around these five topics that happened in the data. Leadership identification development. So how do we develop these people? How do we even recognize them? How do we pick them? What does that really mean? How is this relationship a device for transformation? How is it that it produces learning for both of us? We bring differences to the table, culturally and theologically. We often don't want to talk about those. How will we contend with them? I don't know what makes you tick. That was one of the major questions. I don't know what makes them tick. The things that motivated me don't seem to be what motivates them. How do I learn about that? And finally, I don't know that I'm ready to give up control to give them a chance to stretch. Or what if I set them up to fail? Or, God, when are they going to take control? So how do we negotiate those power differences? Those are the five conversations that are going to happen this afternoon. We would like, during lunch, for you to talk with the person you brought with you in pairs. If you didn't bring somebody with you, find somebody you want to work with for the afternoon, either someone of a different generation or a colleague of the same generation. But do this in a pair. For those of you who travel together here, look at those five topics and prayerfully consider which of those five would be most meaningful to your relationship and your organization, and pick one together. And you will go to that conversation together, any one of the five. At 1:30, report to the room of your generation. So incumbent leaders in here, emerging leaders in there. You will see table signs all over this room and table signs all over that room indicating the name of the conversation. There'll probably be two tables per each of the five topics because we want to keep the group small. As a pair, find the table of the topic you've chosen and go to that table. There will be, we have 20 facilitators that have been very carefully trained and scientifically engineered to help you with your conversation. Can I ask those facilitators to stand up now so you can recognize their faces? So you have lots of great support and help ready to guide your conversation. As a way to help you and your colleague choose which conversation, all of the questions that could be discussed for all five topics are in your book. And you will notice that some of those questions have an edge to them. Those questions came right out of your data. So these aren't questions that we're asking. These are questions that you're asking. You'll see that there are two types of questions. Each generation has questions that they're asking about themselves, and each generation has questions they're asking of the other generation. And you'll get a chance to cover both of those in your conversation. So if you're not real clear with your colleague which one you want to benefit from, look over all the questions and see if that doesn't provide you with some insight about which topic would best benefit you as a pair. One of your options is not to divide and conquer. Oh, you go to that one and I'll go to this one. We'll get twice as much learning. No. This is about the two of you journey together. And if you have trouble picking which one, negotiate that. That's the point of the conference. If there's one that you feel really inclined to avoid because it scares you, probably the one you ought to go to. But you get to decide. Part of what you heard from Terry and Steve this morning is this is your conference. This is your conversation, and we have turned control over it to you. We have no idea how many of you will pick which topics. Our facilitators are ready to facilitate any one of those conversations where you go. So we're going to follow your lead this afternoon. So at 1:30, when you show up in your respective rooms and go to those tables, that's when we'll know which conversations you're going to have. We won't know before that, and we're ready to take that risk with you. At the end of that first conversation, your facilitator will have documented some of your insights and conclusions from your conversation. They will ask one of you in the group to be prepared to share your group's thoughts in conversation two. At 3:00, everybody will reconvene in here. Once again, you'll see those table signs up again. And we're going to ask the groups who discussed, for example, leadership development as emerging leaders, to join the incumbent leaders who discuss the same topic. If the groups get too large, we'll split them because we want to keep them small conversations. So when you get back in 3 o'clock, we're going to be mixing it up to make sure you're at the right conversation with a small enough group of people. And again, our facilitators will be ready to take on those conversations wherever they go. In your book, there are detailed instructions for each of the conversations, and we'd like over lunch for you to take a look at those so you can be familiar with how the process is going to go. Once again, your facilitators will guide the conversations in both cases. Because any number of these 5 conversations may be of great interest to you, we wanted to make sure that you didn't miss out on the 4 you're not going to go to. So in that second conversation, you're going to see at your tables a very large template that your group will fill out about your conclusions. Tonight at the reception, there'll be a gallery of all of your work posted around the reception area where that is, so you'll get the chance to see everybody's collective wisdom, right? So you'll get the chance to benefit from all of the conversations that take place this afternoon, even the ones you weren't part of. So we've thought about and accounted for the fact that we want you to all be enriched by all 5 of these topics, even though you're going to focus on just one of them this afternoon. Oops, not him yet. He's coming. So let me ask, are there questions or thoughts or any sarcastic remarks you want to make about either of the conversations or your work today? Over lunch, join your colleague, prayerfully consider which topic. 1:30, be in the respective room of your generation. Find the table that's labeled of the topic you chose. Participate really well in that conversation. At 3 o'clock, rejoin the generational mix in here and continue the conversation from there. Great group behavior. Be mindful of your airtime. Don't use this as a chance to grind an axe over an issue that's important to you. It's not a sermon time to preach. Don't be a wallflower and try and hide behind other people. Offer your voice. And be courageous. We recognize that some of the questions in that book that you asked are not easy questions. Our intent is not for you to resolve and solve these problems today. We may barely just scratch the surface, if at all, on some of these issues today. Our goal is for you to take them back with you tomorrow afternoon and keep the conversation alive and well for many years to come, not only just between the two of you, but among your entire organization.
So, again,
just because tomorrow we're going to continue doing more work around these 5 themes, and tomorrow we're going to close with a reentry exercise where you can be thoughtful and preparatory about how you go home with what you've learned, and that's also best done in community. And so if there's somebody you have journeyed with over the 24 hours, you'll have somebody to have that reflective conversation with. So pick somebody. It doesn't have to be somebody you know. In fact, it might be beneficial to have somebody you don't know if you didn't come with somebody. So look around, and if there's somebody of a different generation or somebody of the same generation, that's fine. If you're both incumbent leaders, then certainly both of you can come to this room at 1:30. But don't do it alone. Don't try and hide. Other questions or things we can clarify for you? It is undoubtedly going to be a rich and energetic and exciting and feisty conversation. And hopefully deeply enriching. These are things, clearly by the 92 pages of write-in comments that we got from you, clearly things you have thought long about. Clearly things that for some of you, there has not been a forum to have the conversation. For those of you who came in pairs, perhaps this will be the first time you've ever addressed this together. We applaud you for the courage to do that. And our goal is to make it a safe and meaningful environment. You get to share in making it safe as well. It's a collective responsibility to make anything we want to bring to the table here, able to be explored. Okay. Well, again, we applaud your courage and thank you for your participation here. It is ultimately going to be you that creates the collective wisdom and brilliance of what we learned today. I am the only person standing between you and lunch, and that is not a role I relish. So I'm going to turn it over to Terry right now, and he is going to give you instructions on the food, I suppose, and probably pray for it as well.